Gudgeon Rail 2?
Yes, this we went on this scheme from Saugor to Jhansi, and I was guarding a railway bridge at the time. And at the end of the scheme, as we were about 30 miles away, I didn't feel like marching my men all the way back to Saugor, back to Jhansi, so I stood in the middle of the railway track, put my hands up, stopped a goods train, and we had a free ride with our men in the coal trucks and me on the footplate, also driving the engine back to Jhansi.
How long did you stay at Saugor?
We were at Saugor from the end of June 42 till about October 42, and then we were at Jhansi until January 43. And from Jhansi we went by train up to Assam and then into Burma.
At that time, the so-called Quit India movement was on, being staged by the Indian National Congress. Did you see anything of that civil disobedience kind of thing?
I didn't see anything personally, but I used to read the Indian newspapers every day, especially the Times of India, and what they were doing at the time, they were causing a lot of damage on the Indian railways. They would remove fish plates, and a lot of trains were derailed. Gandhi was being very, very active then, and it continually made headlines in the local papers.
But you personally didn't come into contact?
No, not at all, no.
What kind of reputation did the Japanese soldier have at that time in 42?
Well, I have to say that the media, and certainly the people back home, thought they were invincible, especially after the fall of Singapore and the fact that they'd conquered the whole of the Dutch East Indies, and they captured all these islands in the Pacific. Things weren't going at all well in the Arakan, but Wingate knew that the Japs could be beaten at their own game.
Now, I interrupted your narrative with you going to the frontier with Burma. Can you pick it up from there, please?
Well, actually, yes. We left Jhansi by train in about the middle of January 43, and we went also by sternwheel paddle steamer for part of the way, and we eventually arrived at Dimapur railway station in Assam, where we were met on the platform by Major Calvert, who was to be our column commander. From Dimapur, we marched only at night along the road through the lovely hill station of Kohima, which was to be absolutely flattened a year later, and we eventually arrived at Imphal in Assam, which is what was on a plane.
What impact did meeting Michael Calvert have on you?
I was immensely impressed by him. He was a very dynamic character indeed. You could tell at a glance he'd been a professional army boxer by his flat nose and cauliflower ears.
What was your next step?
We spent about 10 days or so in Imphal. We used to go every day to the Imphal Golf Club, where Wingate had put on the floor all the maps of Burma, fairly large-scale maps. We had to take our boots off when we arrived there and walk round in stocking feet. At this time, Field Marshal Wavell came up and had a long conference with Wingate on about the 6th of February, 43, and finally gave his approval for us to go into Burma. The next day, Wavell inspected us all, and he actually saluted us instead of us saluted him. And the next day, we marched again to go to the River Chinwin. We passed through Timu and Palel, and we eventually got to a place called Tonhay, where we crossed the River Chinwin to get into Burma. There were no bridges across the Chinwin, that part of the world, and crossed by boat, and we also swam across. The mules all swam across. That was very disheartening, as a lot of mules would get almost to the other side, and they'd panic and then turn around and go all the way back again. I several times got a free ride across the Chinwin by hanging on to the tail of a mule. It was very fortunate that when we crossed the River Chinwin, it was in broad daylight and there was no Japanese air activity. And this all took quite a time to get us all across. But we had no casualties and we got all our equipment and all our animals across quite safely. When we got to the other side, we marched about 20 miles and we had our first supply drop by Douglas DC-2s. And I organized the distribution of all our supplies. So we started off with the heavy packs full of rations and ammunition.
What kind of things were in the supplies?
We had rice, shaka boil biscuits, cigarettes, ammunition, petrol for the charging engines for the wireless sets, fodder for the mules, all kinds of things, really.
What did the Gurkhas feel about meeting the Japanese, do you think?
I don't honestly know. They were fairly phlegmatic about it all, I think. Yes, I don't really know. No.
What was the objective of your column?
Well, the objective of our column was to march to the railway line. This is a railway line from Rangoon, Mandalay, up to Indore. And our objective was to destroy the railway line in the vicinity of Nankam Station. We did that most successfully. We blew up three box girder railway bridges. We also put charges on about 70 different places on the rail lines, and we generally caused quite a headache to the Japanese and the people who ran Burma Railways. We also ambushed a Japanese lorry and inflicted quite a lot of casualties.
Were you in on that ambush yourself?
I wasn't physically involved because I was in the at the RRV looking after all the mules. But I certainly could hear all the explosions going off of the three bridges being blown. I could hear all the firing going on, but I wasn't actually physically involved, no.
What were the problems of handling the mules in the Burmese jungle?
As our colonel of our regiment once said, mules are a curse in battle. They had no discipline regarding water. As soon as they could smell a watering hole or a river, they would bolt. And they were very cunning animals. They would fill their stomachs out so that their girth wasn't too tight. They loathed any load which rattled or made a noise, and they would just get rid of it as quickly as possible. We had fully trained muleteers, but these mules tried their patience very sorely indeed sometimes.
Did you eat them?
Yes, we did, yes. We eventually, when we started to get short of food, we had to kill the various mules, and we ate them, yes. Very tough, not very nice either. But we were grateful for the meat anyhow.
What was the morale of the men like in the jungle on that first expedition?
When we started getting short of food, when we got right toward the Shwele, they started getting a bit jumpy. And they started getting anxious as to whether they would get home. They preferred to be in a normal battalion. They didn't like this arrangement very much, where we had this vast organization.
How was discipline imposed?
We had normal military discipline, yes. I mean, obviously we couldn't put anyone on a charge. We didn't have any problems there at all. No problems.
Were you at this rendezvous the whole time?
During this battle of the railway station, yes, I was, yes.
And then where did you go?
Then we marched towards the Irrawaddy. We managed to cross the Irrawaddy, and this is when we cut down on the mules. We lost our elephant in this battle. Shortly after that,
how was the elephant?
The elephant stampeded in the battle. We captured the elephant from the Japanese, actually, earlier on. So we lost the elephant and his mahout as well.
Just ran away,
yes. But we had another battle east of the, between the Irrawaddy and the Shwele, where Harold James, one of my officers, who's at the moment, just written a book about the Gurkhas. He was awarded the MC, and I took a supporting role in this battle. We'd ambushed some Japs walking along a track, and we decided then that things were getting a bit hot, so Calvert then received an instruction that we were all to return to India, because we seem to have stirred up a hornet's nest of Japanese.
What was it like making your way through the Burmese jungle?
Well, it's not all jungle in Burma. Some of it is teak forest, and they have these enormous teak leaves. Some of it's bamboo jungle, where bamboo crackles and you think it's rifle shots. Some of it's in the plains, where you're walking across paddy fields, where the paddy fields are flooded. Some places it's very dry and you get bushfires. But in proper jungle, whether it's bamboo or teak, especially bamboo jungle, it can be very slow going, and it means slashing away with kukris or pangas. Or dars, rather. Dars.
Did you fall sick on this first expedition?
No, but this was one of the problems of the first expedition. If anyone was sick or wounded, we had to leave them behind with a local village. Not like the second expedition, when they had these light planes who could evacuate them. I only really felt ill was towards the end of the campaign, when I was suffering from lack of food and general exhaustion.
What other specific memories do you have of that first expedition?
One of the chief memories is the pinpoint accuracy of the RAF in dropping our supplies. They were just given a map reference and some feature to aim off, and they always dropped their supplies spot on in the middle of where we were. And I enjoyed also the camaraderie of the various other officers. We became very close to each other. I was immensely impressed by the leadership of Calvert. He was a marvellous map reader, and the maps which we had, the areas hadn't been very well surveyed, and Calvert always knew exactly where we were, and he never got us lost, not once.
Now, can you pick up the narrative again, please, of the first expedition as far as it concerned you personally?
So I don't quite follow what you mean.
You said we left off with you saying
about
the Irrawaddy.
Yes. We then marched further east, and we tried to cross the River Shwele. We couldn't get across. So that's when we had instructions to return to India. We got as far as the River Irrawaddy, and Calvert tried to get hold of some boats, but the Japs had taken all the craft to the other side of the river. And so he decided the only way to get across the Irrawaddy was to build what they call sapasampans, which is a framework of bamboo, and the skin was ground sheets. I was in the rear guard to get across, and unfortunately my ground sheets were rotten, and our boat wouldn't float. And as I had a party of 12, and as the only person who could swim was the Burma rifleman, all the others had got across. I decided to abort that, and I was a little bit worried. We marched up and down the Irrawaddy for several days, and eventually we got to a village, and we hid in some thick undergrowth near the village, and the Burma rifleman established contact with the village, and he produced a boatman, and after a lot of hard bargaining, I arranged with this boatman by paying him some of my precious silver rupees to ferry our men across that night. We all got across safely to the other side. I had no maps of the area, and all I had was a prismatic compass. And I thought if I marched on a bearing of about 330 degrees, it would take us more or less back to where we started from. I had to allow for the various mountain ranges on the way. I got progressively weaker towards the end. In the end, I had to order my men to go ahead and leave me. I was then on my own, and I knew I must be fairly near the River Chinwin, so I got to a small footpath, and I waylaid a Burmese fishmonger who was selling dried fish.
This was on the 20th of April?
Just before then, yes. About 2 days before that. And he said, oh, I'll get you a boat across the river and I'll get you to the British lines. In fact, all he did, he took me to this village and he handed me over to the local Burmese militia. And while I was having tea in this little Burmese hut, I was suddenly confronted by all these Burmese militia aiming Lee Enfield rifles at me. They eventually took me to the local nearest Japanese garrison, which was at Morlaike. And this fisherman, for his services, got a reward of 50 rupees.
How were you treated by the first Japanese that you met?
Well, I'm afraid the first Japanese I met, I was rather rude to him, as I'd been reading a penguin book, and when he came into the room in his kimono, I went on reading the book, so he flew into a huge rage. And then he interrogated me, and although he could speak perfect English, he had an interpreter with him, and he had his double-edged samurai sword, which he had pointing at my throat for about 4 hours. He asked me a whole lot of detailed questions about the Chindits. I didn't disclose I was in the Chindits, as I just told him I was on a foot patrol across the Chinwin, and I was part of the army guarding the Chinwin, and he seemed to believe that, fortunately.
Where was this?
This was a place called Tanga on the east bank of the River Chinwin. No, sorry, I was captured at Tanga, but this interrogation took place at Morlaike. That's right, Morlaike. Which is on the West Bank.
What happened to you next?
I was then questioned again, and they tried different tactics and started offering me sake and sweetmeats and so on, but I wasn't fooled by that. And then I was taken by truck to a railhead, and on the way we were strafed by a bow fighter, and I did think of trying to escape then, but I thought better of it, and I was rather weak. And then I went by train to Mandalay. I had to detrain at the Arva Bridge, if that had been blown, and I eventually ended up by train at Rangoon Station. My hands were tied closely with rope all the time. And from Rangoon Station, I was interrogated again. And then I was taken to Rangoon Central Jail in Commissions Road in Rangoon, where I was spent the next two years as a POW.
Who else was there?
We had quite a lot of Chindits from the first expedition and the second expedition as well. We had a lot of air crews, RAF, and also United States Army Air Force. We even had a naval person taking POW. We had quite a lot of POWs from the Burma campaign of early 1942, including two senior medical officers, one the ADMS of 17 Division, and also the chief doctor of the first Chinid exhibition, Major Ramsey.
Who was in charge of the central jail?
Our senior British officer was a Brigadier Hobson, who had been in the British American Tobacco Company in Shanghai. Unfortunately, he was killed by one of our own planes on the day we were liberated. He was a very fine man and a very good bridge player.
Who were the Japanese in charge?
Japanese commander of the jail was a major. I can't recall his name. We didn't see very much of him. But most of the guards were other ranks.
How did they behave?
Not good at all. They didn't like chindits, and they didn't like officers. And as I'm 6 foot tall, they didn't like tall people, as they're very small people themselves.
Why didn't they like chindits?
Because they'd beaten the Japs at their own game. They were terrified of chindits. They didn't like them at all.
Did they think that Chindit method of fighting was illegitimate?
I don't think so. No.
How were you fed?
Given very scanty rations, our main food was rice, but we suffered very badly from lack of vitamin B, and very many of us got beriberi, which kind of inflated the body enormously with fluid. We had a very little meat. We had a little vegetable in the way of pumpkins, egg fruit. We certainly didn't have any bread or milk. We didn't have any Red Cross food parcels, as the people who appeared I was in Germany had. I had just two batches of mail. Conditions were extremely bad and very primitive indeed. There was very little medical care. There were no drugs. We had smallpox, outbreaks of smallpox, dysentery, malaria, cholera. There were 210 chindits in our prison, and only 42 survived.